kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
My Skype has been recording for 13 minutes now.
Beautiful. And we've done no work.
Nothing
we've
at
read
all.
Nothing. We've talked about some games. Barely.
Fuck it. If he joins, he joins. What's up, everyone? This is the SML podcast. I am... Oh, my God. He's messaging now. What's up, everyone? This is Joe. This is the SML podcast. No Chris Huber today, but I am joined by a different Chris.
Yay!
Chris Taylor's here, as well as Ian Davis.
Hello.
How are
you? Hello, hello,
hello. How are you guys doing? How are you guys?
I'm doing okay.
Hey, doing good.
Oh, fine.
Doing
got
good?
Got that evening topping going.
Everyone doing good. So everyone's good. Yeah. That's good. That's good. Got, are you good? I'm good.
We got Taffy. We got games. There's a thunderstorm. It's going to be great.
Thunderstorms are always good.
Oh, yeah.
Good times. So, yeah, we are going to do a handful of news and reviews, and then we also have a fun interview coming up later in the episode. I'm going to be talking with Tony Goland over his game Binaries. Doesn't that sound fun?
Hooray!
Yes.
Yay! But
that does sound fun.
First, well, why don't we kick off with a little bit of news. Ian, you're a fan of the PlayStations, correct?
Indeed. Indeed, I am. I have several of the PlayStations at the moment.
Have you seen the PlayStation Loves Creators Innovator sale going on?
I opened the store to look at some of the games that you told me about earlier and saw that, but I didn't really look through it.
Oh my God, the sale is massive.
It does look pretty big.
Yeah, I was shooting whenever I see sales, I like shooting out some tweets to, you know, share the love of the people who've been on our show. And normally I'll do like, hey, this game is on sale from this person. Here's a link to it. And with this, I'm just like, this is on sale from this. Go. Just there's too much.
Just go buy them. There are so many things.
Yeah, there's
and there are. There are quite a few.
There are, God, between all the platforms, there's got to be at least 100 different sales going on.
Wow. I don't know if I could do it.
I'll go down the list and find just a handful of good ones. Vector Unit has Riptide and Beach Buggy Racing, Dangerous Golf, which was pretty awesome, Dreamals, Loot Interactive has a handful of games on there.
Oh, nice. We like Loot.
Gunsgorn Cannoli, that was one of my favorite games that we covered on here. Letter Quest from Digirati. Those dudes are pretty cool. Pretty cool. Team 17's got a couple on there. Ollie from Roll 7. There's a shitload of stuff. Just looking down the list again.
Sounds like a shitload of stuff.
Looking down the list again, I'm just like, oh my God, there's just way too many. Shadwin and the Trine games from Frozen Byte. Tennis in the Face from 10 Tons, which is always good. I love that game title.
That's a great title.
Tennis like in the title. Face.
I'm imagining tennis balls, right? You know, just being flung at your face at high speeds.
Well,
I'm just imagining the word tennis, like, just in giant onomatopoeia lettering.
Have you guys not played it or seen it?
No. Not a bit.
It's a mobile style game where you basically hit tennis balls and try to hit people.
Mm. Oh, nice!
And like it's like tennis
dodge.
Kinda. It's puzzle style. So you have to, you know, get the trajectory right and hit, you know, clear the level. It's really good.
They're ripping my real world strategy.
I was sad because they did a sequel called Baseball Riot, and I was really hoping it would have been Baseball in the Face.
And it wasn't.
In the Face could have been a franchise.
Mo.
It should have been.
Should have been.
Football in the Face.
Indeed. So,
Baseball 2000 in the Face.
But before we dive into that interview, I know, Chris, you're joining us to talk about a game. Ian, you're here to chat about a handful of games with me. Do you guys want to just dive into these reviews? Get the shit over and done with?
Yeah, sure.
Let's get the shit over and done with. Chris, do you want to start off, or should we spread out the love a little bit?
I could start off. That's fine.
All right. So The Legend of Kusakari, I think that's the name of it.
It is.
Looks pretty fun.
Originally developed by Liberage, ported and published by released August 25th on the Nintendo 3DS for $4.99. Chris Taylor, tell us about this game.
Okay. So, I really love the name of the company. Two N's and three O's, or three zeros if you like. Okay, so Legend of Kusakari is basically what they like to call an eccentric Japanese puzzle game. I like to call it Slidey Zelda Chops All the Grass.
That's from the video, that's what it looked like.
Yeah, exactly. It's one of those kind of games that you see once every 1,000 or so RPGs where you get to play the role of someone that's sort of outside of the usual spotlight. Like, mm-hmm. Torniko, The Last Hope, which is, you play the Dragon Quest character and you run an item shop.
Yeah.
And then also on 3DS, you got Weapon Shop the Omasi, where you play a blacksmith where you forge other heroes like weapons. And, so in that vein, you have Shibakari, who is the actual name of the hero. I don't know what Kusakari actually means, but Shibakari is the name of the hero. And he is a dedicated sort of landscaper who, using the power of his scythe, goes about chopping all the grass in areas where heroes are fighting monsters. And...
I said he likes living dangerously.
Exactly. Well, that's kind of the thing, is because he doesn't know how to fight or anything, so you're avoiding the battles entirely. Like, you don't interact with heroes or enemies. Touching them depletes your life bar. So you basically just go about doing your work, which is to say, clearing the ground so that they have better footing. To almost no reward and very little fanfare, and I'll get back to the fanfare.
Oh,
that's
God,
a big part
fanfare.
Of it.
Mo, get down.
So the challenge in the game, it basically drops you into a stage with the heroes and the monsters and everything, and you get a little map on the lower screen where you get to see where all the grass is, which is kind of handy, and you run around chopping all the grass, and just like a real job, your life meter depletes as time goes by. So basically, you have a limited amount of time to either chop up all the grass or find the blue grass, which according to the creators, you eat, and it restores your life.
I bet.
And they
you
say there's
it.
Not. Yeah, the creators' webpage insists. Either way, the creator's webpage insists that there's nothing wrong with that, quote unquote. So once you do that, then yes, you get the fanfare, which is also the title theme music. It's a little brass band with a horn player that is just extremely sharp. It's
very sharp.
Just tone deaf.
Yeah, so it gives you this high note that just sails off into like, you know, kind of when you open a balloon and start squealing it. It's kind of like what it sounds like. And so it's that, and the one of the only real issues I had with the game is that little fanfare is the start of every play of every level. And yeah, this is the kind of puzzle game where you have infinite lives. You just try again if you don't make it. And as the difficulty mounts, I got a little over halfway through the game. The game has 50 stages. I got in the upper 20s. And even as far as like 10 stages in, the stages start getting like, you know, like real serious business, like it really becomes a puzzle game. Like you really have to strategize as to where, what grass you're going to cut where. And, you have to take timing into consideration. And so you wind up like hearing the fanfare like 10 times a level on average. So yeah, it really, yeah, it's like that. And it's interesting though, because the actual score during the levels and in other parts where you don't see the little brass band, like that's one thing, you see the brass band, you can see this little trumpet fucker. And
I'm just imagining that he's actually like physically fucking the trumpet.
You know what? No, he's not. But it does make that sound. But the actual rest of the music is really good. It's kind of epic, which is sort of silly in the sense that, you know, you're the guy cutting the grass, but it's still giving you the epic hero music. So I quite like that about it. So really my review of it is basically that I think that the good of it is that it's quirky, it's funny, it's like genuinely funny, and it does actually draw you in. Like you really get invested in chopping that grass. As far as like, you know, aesthetics go, you know, graphics, music are as good as you can get for a $5 game.
Hey, $5.
Yeah. Can't beat that. And, let's see, what was the other thing?
I had fun with it because I picked it up myself and I enjoyed the fact that not only is there the campaign, but there's also like an online leaderboard for just like an endless mode.
That's what I was gonna say is that the leaderboard option was like a nice surprise. And you know, the endless mode where you just chop grass and it just keeps growing, which is an amazing thing. If we were to go back in time 30 years and describe to kids in the 80s what video games are going to be like in 2016,
you know how you cut the bushes in Zelda? Imagine that's an entire game and you're gonna like it.
What if they grew endlessly and you could potentially be the best in the world at it? So I really quite like that aspect of it. The controls were a little bit frustrating, and I would say that the stages are very unforgiving very early on. Although if you get over the kind of hump and start like really getting into the flow of it, like you start breezing through levels again. And I think that like my main thing about it is I would have liked to see more incremental growth. Like your side levels up within the stages, but every time you start over, your side starts over. So it's one of the, again, it plays into the strategy, but there's no incremental growth whatsoever in the game. Your character never gets any better once you start a stage.
So it's more like a puzzle game and not like an adventure game.
Exactly. Yeah. If I would have seen something a little more adventure-y about it, like really, I think it's probably because I'm such a fan of Witch and Hero, where you get to, when you replay the stages, like you get to level up and, you know, those level ups stay through so you can get through them a little easier and then start completing the harder levels, even though there's a cap. And that's maybe what I would have liked to see in the game. Although there is a reward system. Basically, if you go through the stage again and beat it and meet a certain criteria, it will give you an item in your inventory, but they're all aesthetic and entirely useless. I would actually like to read a couple in a minute. But I gotta load my game up. But I like that the gimmick of it is so, they're so dedicated to it. They're one-minded to it. Like, the game has a whole story, and every few levels it actually advances the story a little bit.
I like that. So not only is it goofy and offbeat, but it takes itself seriously enough for you to care about it.
It pretends to for the purpose of the joke.
Well, it sounds like an endearing game, and it looks pretty fun, honestly.
Yeah,
it was. It was so stupidly fun to play, which it's missing in some games. Like, you just want to sit down and laugh and have fun at what you're like, the absurdity of I'm not defeating the monsters. I'm cutting the grass so that they can have a clean battlefield.
Exactly. So if you're a fan of that gimmick and can actually commit to doing 50 stages of it, this is your game. This is the game for you. So yeah, you get the, whenever you beat a certain criteria within the level, you have a new entry in your Green Thumb Almanac where you find new plants, I suppose, such as a Pong plant, cursed plant that makes everyone think you stink. Or Fib plant, a plant that ensures no one will believe a word you say.
Oh, wow.
And it's like, it's just all these, like, Shy plant, a plant that will make you become very shy and retiring. And it's like, you just, and they're these sad little plants that, you know, you unlock them by beating each stage's, like, criteria, and they don't do anything, but I like that they're there.
Fantastic.
So, like, the, so there's no, so
it's like,
no
a, like an unimportant collection.
Yeah.
But it's nice to have around.
Yeah, it's your trophy collection, and in a sense, that sort of assists the you know, humble nature of the actual quest. Let's see, there was one last thing I was gonna say about it. Yeah, I mean, it's Slighty Zelda cuts all the grass. It's
I am completely okay with this.
Yeah. I give it a, as far as the rating goes, I give it a, well, basically, if, as I said, if you like the gimmick and can follow it through for 50 levels, this is definitely for you. If you just want to pick it up and try it, that's fine. But either way, or if this all sounds terrible to you, no matter what, you should buy this game. Because I fully trust that, you know, with more success, we'll create more, you know, fully fledged games of this. They're going in the right direction, basically.
Definitely.
Like, I want to see many more games like this.
Sounds good.
Yeah, I like it.
All right.
Slighty Zelda cuts all the grass.
Yeah, I dig it, so I will echo your statement that I think for $5, it's just such a fun, goofy, offbeat title that I think it's worth picking up for $5.
Just get it and play the fanfare for your friends whenever they do something stupid.
Seriously, like, I wish the soundtrack was available so I could just play that at the end of the show.
I know, right? I'm actually going to play, if I can get it close enough to the speaker, I'm going to, That's
beautiful.
The fanfare. Yeah.
That is the fanfare. Yeah, I watched a YouTube video. That's like, I'm pretty...
Good stuff. All right, so next game to chat about. Chris, I don't know if you're planning on sticking around or not, but it's up to you.
I actually have to go.
Oh, you got your laundry, don't you?
Laundry and dinner and all the doings of domestic life.
Well, at least we got you on to talk about Kusakari.
Yes, and thank you very much for you know, introducing me to this, because I'm now going to check out their other games, which I think I have it pulled up here, Blast'em Bunnies and Escape Vector. I think I actually have Escape Vector.
Yeah, we covered Blast'em Bunnies on the show. It was such a goofy, another just goofy, weird title where you're a bunny defending your yard against invading bunnies. And it was so ridiculously addictive. I couldn't stop playing it.
That's perfect.
I don't know why I can't stop playing it, but I just can't stop playing.
That's what they want in a game. Is,
yeah.
You know, for them to make it and for you to keep playing it.
Indeed. Well, Chris,
and then you'll want their other game.
It was good having you on briefly.
Yeah. Thank you for having me on the show.
Chris, it was nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too, Ian. You too.
Peace.
Peace.
Ooh. All right. So, time to move on to the rest of the games. The next game to talk about is called Assetto Corsa. This is developed by Kunos Simulazioni. I think I said that right. Published by 505 Games. Released August 30th for $49.99 on Xbox One, PS4. This feels like it's trying to edge in on the Forza Motorsport area of hardcore sim racing. The difference I see is that where Forza has plenty of options to casualize things, you know, with assisted braking and assisted turning and stuff like that, The casual options in Assetto Corsa are significantly less. Like this is so not a game for casuals.
It's more of a hardcore racers game.
Yes, this
where you go in and you fine tune all the details of your car.
Yes, this is 100% hardcore. Like if you're not playing with a steering wheel, they're probably mocking you. I mean, I played it with controller and I did fine with it, but it just feels like this is the game where you need to have like the $300 steering wheel, the you know, just the massive setup,
the brake pedals and the clutch and all that.
Get like a pilot chair to set everything in. The game itself is beautiful. It controls like a dream. It's, you know, it has the campaign, go through all the different events, different classes of cars, different circuits. There's, I think, 20 different tracks in the game. I know that they do also have plans for DLC. I think, oh God, I should really have this stuff pulled up more frequently.
I mean, being prepared.
I'm never prepared. I am never prepared. Fuck it. I'm not going to start now.
Might as well not.
The game does come in slightly under like the price of a big budget AAA title. Like it's only $50 instead of $60, which some people might be turned off by that. They might think that they don't have confidence in the product, but I think it's actually a smart move because it's easier for people to get into. And then when you see that there's a $30 season pass with extra car packs and additional track, it's not as hard of a pill to swallow.
Yeah. And so it's $80 instead of $90.
Or $100 or $110 or whatever.
Or $110. Yeah, whatever they decide to charge for their DLC.
Seriously. Some of them get ridiculous. But yeah, the game.
World we live in now.
What'd you say?
I said it's the world we live in now. It's not true. It's no longer expansion packs. It's DLC.
America. Yeah, like I said, the game is beautiful. It controls well. It is brutally tough. Like if you're a fan of casual racers, like if you're more excited for Forza Horizon as opposed to Forza Motorsports, you don't want to get this game. This is not the game for you. If you're the one who gets excited about fine-tuning a car, you know, and getting the perfect details on your vehicle, monitoring your tire temperature, monitoring your engine, you know, the wear and tear on your engine, and just
the angle of the flames on the side of your door.
Basically, it is just a hardcore sim. I can't stress enough how hardcore this is. If you're kind of on the fence, they do have a handful of more casual friendly options in the game. Like it has, ABS brakes and traction control. It has a guideline of where you can follow on the course. It's different from Forza in that Forza has like a dynamic guideline where if you're going too fast, it turns redder. If you're slowing down enough, it goes green. So it's like, hey, you could speed up. This has a static guideline where straightaways it's green. If you're coming close to a turn, it's just yellow on the course. It doesn't change based on your speed. It's basically expecting you to know how to play the game.
Yeah, you have to know how to drive.
Yeah.
In a game setting.
Pretty much.
At least. Not too far off from an actual setting, because I mean it's a simulator.
Yeah, it's again like even the AI in this game is pretty damn tough. Just even earlier in the series, on like the intro cars, I was having a rough time getting first place.
Oh wow!
So again, if you are a hardcore car nut and you are looking for a good sim, not an arcade racer, a good sim, for $50, I think this is worth checking out. So I give it a try.
I will echo Joe, even though I'm not a racer guy. It sounds like a lot of customization if you're into that. I mean, I know I would like to tweak my car a bit more than most other people, but that's only in a game setting. In real life, my car sucks.
Yeah. I'm happy because we just got a new car, so ours does not suck anymore.
Yay!
2010 Jeep Patriot.
Nice.
And it has like working windows and working air conditioning. All four of the speakers in the vehicle work. It's crazy. I don't even know what to do anymore.
It's like you've never driven a car like this.
We were joking around that it still feels like a rental. Because we got a rental when we went out to Illinois this summer, and like this just doesn't feel like ours yet.
Yeah.
Like it feels like
it'll get there.
Yeah. Eventually.
Yeah. You'll accept it, and then you'll be like, this is our car.
And then I'll pee in it or something.
Then you'll mess it up.
Yeah.
That's what you do.
Anyway, next game to chat about is called Nebulous, developed and published by Namazu Studios, released August 30th on the PS4, PC, and Oculus Rift for $14.99. It will also be coming to Xbox One and PlayStation VR. This is, first off, you can tell the VR influences are there because everything is handled in kind of a first person looking around. It is a puzzle game kind of similar to The Incredible Machine, where you have a guy, a spaceman who is lost in space, and you need to get him from the starting position to the warp hole at the end of the stage. And, you know, sometimes there's obstacles in the way, or other times they just present you the pieces that you can use that you need to get the guy from the beginning to the end.
And then sounds simple enough, right? Into place. It does sound simple enough, but in practice, watching the videos, that can't be simple at all.
Oh, it gets difficult quick. This is another game that's not going to hold your hand with things. Of course, because you can't have a puzzle game without side objectives. There's stars that you can collect during the stage, and then you are also graded on your time. There's a goal time at the end, as well as how many attempts you made. Like, if you hit the button to start the spaceman falling down, that counts as an attempt.
Before you're ready? Yeah.
Yeah. So it's better to just completely restart. The problem is there is a lot of trial and error to the game, which, you know, some of the stages, like, you're going to have to take a bunch of attempts to figure out how to do it. And then if you want to get all three stars, you're going to have to restart completely fresh and hope that you line up everything well enough that you remember. It's still a fun game, but it is very demanding.
Yeah. Not in a bad way. Not punishing in a bad way. It's just, you know.
Yeah.
They want you to keep the things in mind that you've done before and then utilize them to the best of your ability.
Yeah.
In the game.
And of course, you know, the levels have the usual trappings, like fans that blow you in directions, ramps to guide you. There's planets that you could bounce off of, which is fun.
They're wormholes. I saw.
Yeah, the wormholes can actually, like, everything is presented as kind of its own dedicated screen, where the wormholes will take you over to another screen. And again, like, all of this, you have to get it in one shot. So as the stages get bigger and more complex, things get tough. It is really rough.
Yeah, it sounds a little hairy.
This is a game I would love to try in VR. You could tell this game was designed from the bottom up with VR in mind.
Especially with how the camera moves and the looking and.
Yeah, everything is pretty much done in a first person perspective where you're the one looking at the board and you're the one picking and moving things around. So while I'm using the analog stick to kind of look around and place things where I want them, I would love to try this in actual VR. So maybe if we could eventually afford a PSVR later this year, who knows? I doubt it, but who knows? I'd love to give this game another go in VR because God knows my computer can't handle it. $15. It's I'm going to give it a try. It's definitely not going to be for everyone. It will try your patience, but overall, it is a fun game. It's a unique game with the whole VR perspective. And if you have a beefy PC and you're VR ready and you got a headset and you want to give this baby a go, I think it's worth picking up. So give it a try.
There you go. Try it. Definitely. It looks like fun, but I am kind of scared of it now.
You should be. It's going to take your lunch money.
It's going to beat me up.
Yeah.
Leave me a flagpole and just take me to school.
Take me, Nebulous. Take me. Next game to chat about is called The Other 99. Developed by Burning Arrow, published by Deck 13, released in Steam Early Access August 25th for $14.99. CJ Greenwood is handling this review. He emailed it into us, and Ian, you're going to read this one for us. Keep in mind, for those listening, that this is an early access preview. This is not a full final review. There's still plenty of work and plenty of time to go on this game. So, Ian, what does he have to say?
CJ Greenwood has to say for his The Other 99 review. The Other 99 is a first-person survival game. I really wanted to like this game, but it has some fatal flaws that just completely kill it for me. First, I'd like to state that this game is in early access, so a lot of things are subject to change. And for the game's sake, I really hope it does improve. You are one of 100 people on an isolated island where the goal is to kill the other 99 so that you may leave.
Like the name.
Yeah.
I get it. I get it.
Illusion. The game has a sort of Hunger Games feeling to it, but instead of everyone starting at one place, you have to search the island to find them. You'll generally find 1 to 3 people at camps, but be careful because they can team up on you. Not that they usually will, due to the AI not being very intelligent. I guess you could call them A.
Instead of AI. I get it.
I get it too. No. Instead, they seem to just line up to die, coming at you one at a time. Which, looking at one of the videos, yeah, they kind of do that. But I don't really know.
You said doo doo.
Yeah.
anyway.
Caliber ship. Anyway, the combat in the game feels annoying more than actually fun, which is not what the guy that I watched a video about said. The developers decided to go with analog fighting controls, which means using your right stick or swinging your mouse around to attack rather than clicking. Pardon me. I absolutely hate analog fighting controls in games, but at least this is how the game is meant to be and not some weird glitch, like freezing mid-combat. Oh boy, if you freeze mid-combat, it's all over. You'll have to quit out of the game, but there is currently no save feature, so be ready to restart it.
Ugh.
No save feature, no checkpoints. Apparently there's no crafting or anything either, which might be a feature that comes later. Anyway, tangent. It wouldn't be so bad if freezing wasn't so common. Of course, like I mentioned, it is an early access, so take everything I say with a grain of salt. These things will hopefully be fixed in updates. Which, with those kind of problems, yes, please fix them.
Yeah.
It also takes forever to find people after killing 15 to 20. It's like, there are 80 more people, yet I checked the whole area and can't find one more now. I spent 20 minutes looking for another person to kill, and I found myself walking around the entire island, not finding anyone. So there's got to be some sort of trigger for these other people, maybe.
Maybe.
Another problem I was having was with weapons. When I would pick up a new weapon and equip it, it would still show and use the previous weapon I had equipped. However, it still used the health of the new item. This is one of those games where each item has a limited amount of hits you can inflict before it breaks. So, like, Dead Island.
Yeah. Same with the analog fighting, it sounds like.
Yeah. Yeah, which I'm not the biggest fan of. I like having a button.
True.
Yeah. But, you know, to each their own.
Yeah.
It's a genre of game. So durability. The graphics are quite nice. The rain particles are particularly awesome. On the outskirts of the island, the ocean looks incredible, especially with the stormy cloud effects. If there is one saving grace to the game, it's the way it looks. I noticed at first that the game was having frame rate issues, but they seem to fix themselves after 10 minutes, so I guess it takes some warming up.
Maybe. It's like an old gremlin. You just got to get it fired up and get the heater running. Then you're good.
No, I haven't seen a gremlin in years. In very many years. I think I was a very small child. They also introduced something pretty cool and unique. Your food and health bar are tied together, and so are your stamina and thirst. This means if you don't eat, it'll lower your max health by a notch. The same goes for stamina. If you don't drink, you have lower stamina. Stamina is needed for fighting and sprinting. Although in my experience, sprinting is useless anyway. You walk pretty fast, so wasting your stamina on sprinting is not recommended. Which, from watching the video, yeah, you do move really quickly. While I won't say deny it, I will say hold off for now. The only reason to buy it right now is to support the devs, hopefully helping them fix the game quicker and make it better. If you want a game to actually play and enjoy right now, this isn't for you. This is for someone who enjoys watching a game grow and develop into something worth playing in the future.
Makes sense. I personally haven't been able to play it. My computer, I don't think, just can't handle it. I tried firing it up and I would get to the title screen and I would see rain and thunder and lightning and then it would just freeze up and I couldn't do anything. So
it looked like it needs a lot of background stuff to be able to run properly.
Probably. I could imagine, especially if it looks as good as he's saying. I know our other friend Ian, Jesus Ian, who hangs out in the chat frequently, he's been playing it, and he said that for the longest time he didn't like it, but then something just clicked, and he felt he was really enjoying it. So,
yeah, I think that's what one reviewer said that I watched. Well, I only watched one review, so.
So it looks like something to at least keep an eye on to see if the problems flesh themselves out. And hopefully we'll come back and take another look at this one in a little bit and see how it grows up over time.
Yeah, hopefully it grows into something really awesome because it sounds like a great premise. Yeah. And the whole looking at your watch to see how many people are left is kind of creepy.
They need an app so it's like your real watch, your smartwatch. You look at it.
You're outside of the game. It tells you how many people have died while you're gone.
Yeah.
Because it never stops.
Good times. Final game to chat about this episode is called Hue, H-U-E. This one is H-U-E. Developed by Fiddlesticks. Great company name. I love it. Published by our friends at Curve Digital. This one released August 30th for $14.99. Xbox, PS4, I believe PC as well. This is the most common thing I've heard it compared to is Limbo with color.
That sounds about right.
it has a very similar look to Limbo, but a more cartoony style where it's all black and white. And you are a boy, and you need to find your mother. And as you venture out, you end up discovering the colors of the world, pretty much. You start off with, I believe, blue's the first color. Watch, I'll probably fuck up and get the first color wrong in the game. but there will be obstacles and puzzles through the game where instead of, you know, with Limbo, it's kind of just journey through and finish the thing. This has a set number of puzzles that you have to go through, and you know, it kind of eases you in by like, there's a guy trapped behind boulders. What color are the boulders? They're blue, same color that you just got. So you use the right analog stick to switch between the colors that you've unlocked. You switch the background to blue, and those boulders basically disappear into the background.
Yes.
So you rescue the guy. Easy enough.
The mechanics look really cool.
It's simple enough until you have like eight different colors and you're trying to time perfect jumps. You know, when you when you hit the analog stick, it slows everything down, kind of like bullet time. The fact that we still refer to the Matrix for that is hilarious.
Color time.
Yeah. But it slows everything down, and it gives you time to, like, you know, there's sections where there's boulders coming towards you, and you have to switch the color to that boulder, make it disappear. You'll still see the dust trail of where it was, but the boulder's basically gone. So you have
gone to, because you're viewing the world through that color.
Yeah. So you have to switch between the colors to get through these areas. They have a ridiculous amount of different puzzle mechanics as you go through the game. There are 20, God, I'm going to fuck this up too. I think 28 hidden objects in the game. I feel bad not having all the details on this, but I beat the game like 2 weeks ago. I've been dying to talk about this game because I enjoyed it so much, and I haven't been able to really talk about it until now because the glory of embargoes. But this game is incredible. This is going to be one of my top games of the year. Just the puzzles in the game are really well done. The collectibles give you a reason to go back and replay those areas with new colors and kind of give you a fresh spin on some of the puzzles. You know, and now
getting those new colors, does it open up areas in those older levels that you couldn't get to before?
For the collectibles, yes.
Okay.
Like, some of them are out in the open where you'll just see, like, a blue door, a darker blue than the one you have. And you're like, oh, well, I don't have that color. I'll have to come back and get it later. And then there's like, the one puzzle has boulders at the top of the screen and three different colored barriers. And you have to switch between the barriers to move platforms to collect a key, but the last barrier, you know, if you do that and you're not protected, you don't get somewhere to hide, those boulders will crush you. And you basically have to come back to that area when you're able to, you know, manipulate all the colors the way you need. So you can not only climb up, drop the boulders down, climb up on top of the boulders, and then bring the different barriers back in order so you could climb up to a hidden ladder at the top.
Oh, geez.
That was one of the longest ones that it took me to find out, because I couldn't find that one hidden collectible for so friggin' long.
But you found it.
Eventually, yes. And funny enough, if you go onto the website trueachievements.com, which keeps track of everyone's achievements on games, I am the first person in the world to complete Hue. I mean, besides the developers, clearly. It felt awesome. I'm like, wow, I'm the first person to complete this game.
It looks really cool and fun.
It is fantastic. It is just a super enjoyable experience. It not too long, didn't overstay its welcome. Some of the puzzles towards the end could be pretty tough. Like, you're going to rack your brain trying to complete these. But if you do it without a guide or without a video helping you, that is an amazing sense of accomplishment. Like, I felt fucking proud of myself when I completed the story. I did it.
You're like the only person playing it. So
yeah, I was the pioneer. Thinking about it, I should have gone back and I should have made a fucking video guide for this. I would have gotten all the views. Man. If I could turn back time.
Oh, God. You know how many times I hear that song?
No.
Okay, a lot.
Why?
I don't know.
So, yeah, Hue is a definite buy it.
Yeah, Hue looks really great. Even the video for it had a whole bunch of awards, indie awards they won, and things they were nominated for, like 10, 15 different things.
I'm still trying to set something up through Curve to get the guys from Fiddlesticks on the show. So hopefully we could get something worked out. I was hoping to have them on already, but scheduling is a motherfucker sometimes.
Right.
But fingers crossed, I'm still going to keep trying. I would love to get the Fiddlesticks guys on this show. I'm just happy I could finally talk about Hue. I am so happy I could finally talk about it. It is such a good game. It's just, and it's beautiful too. The colors, it's just so vibrant and
It looks really pretty.
I'm tempted to buy it on PS4 just to play it again. It's good stuff, man. Good stuff. Good stuff.
Sounds like good stuff.
So yeah, that's all I got on the docket for this episode. Is there anything you want to talk about? What are you playing, Ian? What are you playing?
Well, Nio, that Japanese Dark Souls.
Nio!
By Team Ninja. This is what I'm currently playing. It's in the beta demo at the moment, so obviously not finished. Yeah. But I'm assuming it's coming out pretty soon after this.
I don't know.
I'd have to look it up. But it's fun.
2016.
Yeah, 2016. It'll be out this year.
Yeah.
It's basically Samurai Dark Souls with Team Ninja's flair to it.
Nice.
Really nice environments. The buildings can be disorienting, so unless you practice your way around like Dark Souls, you won't have an easy time of it. They want you to be calculated in how you tackle things, which I think is really cool.
Game wrecked me.
Well, I'm digging the beta so far, except I can't beat the first boss, who's got two wrecking balls attached to his wrists. And you fight him inside a giant ship. By giant, I mean maybe a 10 by 10 room, 15 by 15. And he just smashes you.
I'm looking up. It's saying it is supposed to revamp the stamina system and remove durability for the final game. Compared to the alpha, I guess.
Interesting.
Ah, no, don't play audio. I'm doing a fucking... Fuck you, GameSpot.
Doing a show.
GameSpot, you bitches.
Those bastards at GameSpot. How dare you?
Motherfuckers! So yeah, good stuff.
Yeah. Still playing Final Fantasy XI on my crappy computer. It's great.
Good times.
You can just grind through everything now. It's ridiculous. I'm waiting for the 4.0 update for PS4.
I don't know if I'm allowed to talk about anything in that. I don't think I am.
Yeah, if you know stuff and you have a no talking agreement, then
I mean, I could talk about is like the stuff that they've made public, where like they're adding folders and a new fresh UI.
I remember.
Yeah, that's all public stuff, so I can mention what's public, but right. Yeah, whenever it's public, I'll be able to talk about my experience with it.
Yay!
Good
times. I'm excited about Dark Souls 3 DLC.
When's that coming out?
Ashes of Ariandel is coming out, I believe, October 29th.
Yeah.
And from what it looks like, if you played the first Dark Souls, is we are exploring what became of the Painted World after so many thousands of years. That's what it looks like to me.
Good times.
Oh, yeah.
No, I think it's about good time to wrap this up. We're going to take a quick musical break, and then we will be back with my interview with Tony Goland to talk about binaries, which is fucking awesome. Ian, do you have any final words to end this segment?
To end this segment is to end all things for today.
We'll be right back.
All right, my guest at this time, calling in all the way from Scotland, is Tony Gowland. Is it Gowland, Gowland?
It's Gowland.
Gowland.
But don't worry, everyone gets it wrong.
Hey, I try. I try. We get it. And this is one of the easier names, and I still screwed it up. So, Tony Gowland of Scotland, of Ant Workshop, the game Binaries. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, thanks. Yeah, I'm doing really, really good. Yeah.
Things going well over in Scotland?
Yeah, it's been a bit of a mixed day in terms of weather. Sorry, it's a British thing, always start talking about the weather first.
Oh, that's fine, that's fine.
Yeah, so yeah, mixed day, but good, it's good. It's, yeah, so it's like I was just saying, off air, it's kind of 10:30 now, so getting to work properly in the evening, and Deus Ex unlocks in an hour and a half, so ready to crack on, chat some binaries, then shoot some fools.
Nice. Sounds like a good night for sure. And I can totally understand talking about the weather, considering the horrible rain we had yesterday and the fact that my roof leaked, so we're starting the show later. So, although clearly this is not last week when we're recording this. This is obviously recorded like the day this episode is releasing, and I'm not editing or anything like that.
We don't do that
on this show. We're too good for that on this show. So, by now you've played Deus Ex.
It's not a Christmas special.
You've played Deus Ex for a week and a half now. How is it?
Oh, it's brilliant, man. Yeah, I really enjoyed the last one, and this one's kind of more of the same, but a little bit prettier, new levels. So it's what I wanted out of the game.
I'm glad that we're all having fun with Deus Ex right now. It's been a good time. Been a good time.
Yep.
It's been a good time for games in Scotland as well. I don't think we've ever had someone from Scotland on the show before. And then like 2 weeks ago, we had Richard Wood of Stormcloud Games on for the game Brutal. And now you're on with us to talk about binaries. It's like Scotland is just taking over right now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so I'm not originally, I mean, you can probably tell from the accent, I'm a lot easier to understand than Woody is.
Oh, God, yeah. I take it you know him? Are you guys friends?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I am. In a past life, we used to work together in previous companies.
Oh, where was that at?
It's a place called Outplayer Entertainment, which is also in Scotland, and they do mobile free-to-play things. Trying to think of the name of any of their games. No, they did an Angry Birds bubble popping game and a tower defense game where you were being attacked by aliens and some other stuff, some other bits and pieces.
So what led you to go on to create Ant Workshop and your own game now?
Well, so I've been in the games industry for 16 years. I keep saying 15 years. I keep forgetting to update it. 16 years I've been. Basically, it's the only job that I've ever known, straight out of university into doing this. I've worked at companies like Rockstar. I worked on like a few GTAs, like the handheld GTAs. I worked on Red Dead Redemption. I have also worked at Activision Blizzard on like their mobile stuff, worked on Call of Duty mobile game, and a bunch of stuff like that. So like kind of, I've worked on these like really big franchises and with really big teams, like huge teams. Like, I'm not entirely sure how many people work on like GTA 5, but
14,000 people.
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot of people, right?
I think I worked on it somehow. I'm not sure.
Yeah. I mean, pretty much everyone's in the credits, right? So, so these kind of huge teams kind of spread out around the world and all that kind of thing. And it's cool. And you're working on these amazing games and that's really nice. But then at the same time, it's like, there's a totally different feeling from, like, when you're working on your own things and you're kind of just there and it's all your own kind of baby and you're tweaking everything and you kind of get final say on what's going on with it all. And that was really what I was kind of hankering for quite a while. Like, I've had my sights set on this idea of like, look, I want to do the indie thing. Everyone's doing the indie thing. It's the cool thing to do. So,
all the cool kids are doing it.
Yeah, man. So, yeah, it's basically, I had, like the idea for binaries is kind of something, it's actually something, I had a prototype of it made years and years ago, in Flash. It was actually one of the first things I ever made in Flash. And, it's always been something that, like, I've really, really liked the kind of the gameplay of it and the idea of it, and always kind of expected other people to do something similar, but kind of nobody ever has. So I should probably, at this point, I should probably kind of explain what the game actually...
Yeah, I was just going to get there. Usually my first question, but I kind of missed this one, is for the people who don't know what binaries is, give us the sales pitch.
So binaries is a controller smashingly hard puzzle platform game. It is, you control two characters at the same time, but just using one set of controls. So when you press left, they both go left. When you jump, they both jump. It's like playing two different Super Meat Boy levels at the same time with one controller. It's kind of, yeah, it's as hard as that makes it sound. Hard but fair, I like to think. It's not impossible. I can do it. I can finish it all. So it can't be that bad.
I'm reading the press kit for the game, and at the bottom it says, at the time of writing, Tony still cannot beat all the levels and binaries. Has that changed?
That kind of has changed. I mean, I couldn't put a game out there where, like, I literally can't do it myself.
Sure you could. I mean, you could. You'd be an asshole, but you could.
Yeah. It's not unprecedented. Like, what was it? Those games, years back, kind of 16-bit games and 8-bit games that came out that literally were impossible to finish. So I think it's been done before.
And but, now people speedrun them, like Summer Games Done Quick and stuff like that.
It's a bit of a goal for me with binaries. Like, if people really got into speedrunning it, I'd love that. Like, I always kind of, it was kind of built with that sort of thing in mind. Like, obviously, it's all timed. The game kind of ranks you as you finish a level. It kind of judges you on how well you did. And, a lot of that was kind of with the idea of, like, oh, man, it'd be really cool if kind of speedrunning people got into it. Big win.
In my experience so far, the game does more than judge you based on your performance. It feels like the game is judging me as a human being as I fail repeatedly at it.
People kind of say that a bit. my friends that have played, like my friends that have played it have said, for people that haven't seen the game, there's a lot of text in the levels. Like, it kind of pops up with, like, these little comments and things as you're going through it. And my friends have kind of said, it's as if I'm kind of sat over their shoulder, kind of chatting to them and goading them as they're doing it and kind of picking on them a little bit. But it's all kind of lighthearted. It's that thing of, it makes you feel better about when you beat a level, if the game was just nice to you all the time, it's like, where's the achievement in that, right?
Yeah, I love the little quips that pop up during stages. Even if people are just looking at screenshots for the game, you, on your website, you have some fantastic screenshots for the game. Like, I didn't think you'd get this far, so well done, you. It's so condescending. Like, you could feel the snark, the British snark, just coming over through the text.
Good, man. I'm glad that comes through.
Two balls go into a level. You won't believe what happens next. They die a lot.
It's one of those things where you're never quite sure whether that sort of stuff's going to translate and whether it work, whether the humor of it's going to come across for people. So this is another kind of thing that I always say with the games. It's like, it has up to 10 jokes. Like, I'm fairly confident there's 101 levels in the game, and all of them have, like, these kind of comments in them and stuff. So in theory, there could be 101 jokes in it, but, like, you would have to have exactly the same sense of humor as me for that to be true. And I don't think people do. But I'm fairly confident that across that kind of thing, probably about at least 10 jokes are going to hit home for people. So it's a game that's got 10 jokes in it, man. I mean, what more could you want?
Exactly.
Lots of games say that they're funny, and they're not funny. We've got 10 jokes.
Just stretched out over 100 stages.
Yeah, I mean, you might find some of the... You might find that, like, 11 jokes work for you. Yeah, like, we don't charge... There's no microtransactions in this. We don't charge you extra for... If you find more of this funny, there's no... There's no in-app purchases for that kind of thing.
You should work on patenting that technology, where if you laughed extra, like if you'd laughed at 12 jokes instead of 10, there's like a 20-cent charge deducted from like your Xbox or PlayStation account, just automatically.
What was that patent that was filed before? I saw a screenshot of it again the other day of that thing where it's like you stand up in front, you're playing a game and then it stops playing and shows you like a picture of McDonald's or something, and it's like you have to stand up in front of the camera and shout McDonald's. And
then
Oh my god! I can't remember whether it was Sony or Microsoft that patented that, but it's like it's a thing that exists. Of like it interrupts your game until
that,
I don't think it,
that's
I
how
don't
to make sure I never play your fucking console again.
Yeah, I think it was one of those kind of crazy things, like just before like this generation came out, where it's like people were getting a little bit worried about like always on consoles and what kind of crazy stuff the manufacturers were going to go for. And I'm sure that was about the time that this patent kind of reared its head of like, hey, we could make games where it interrupts you with adverts that you've got to stand up and shout, I really want Pizza Hut.
Like, I love Xbox, but if I had to stop playing a game and stand up and be like, I love McDonald's, I'm loving it, to continue my game, I would turn it off and just smash the goddamn thing.
Yeah, it's, you'd think, like, this sort of product placements in games could be, like, they could really have it, so it's like, instead of like where Call of Duty is like press X to play, pay your respects and stuff like that, it's like you could have a thing in Call of Duty where the guys are like, man, I could really go for some Mackie D's right now.
Press X to pour out your Mountain Dew on the casket.
Yeah, one for my homies.
God, that would be fantastic, actually.
Should not give these people ideas.
I kind of want to see a game company, like, take the product placement and just take it over the top. Like, have you seen Wayne's World?
Yeah, man.
This section in there when they're just doing the unabashedly shameless product placement, I'd love to see that in a game where they just do something like press X to pour out a Mountain Dew for your homies or something like that. And then you hit it and a Mountain Dew commercial plays with the game characters in the commercial that you get to like control. I think it would be funny to have something just over the top parody style.
Yeah. I mean, it's almost like something South Park would do, but they'd probably just make up their own brands and stuff for it rather than doing proper kind of product placement. But yeah, I loved Wayne's World. Should watch Wayne's World again sometime soon.
You should. That's a good movie.
It is, yeah. Someone was reminding me of that the other day as well. Ah, dear.
So yeah, Binaries, that's a game. So,
yeah, the game that I was going to talk about. Yeah. So yeah, I mean... So it's coming out on Xbox One and PS4, or it is out. I'm not sure when this episode's going out. So it either came out or is coming out on August 30th for $10. And hopefully it'll go down pretty well. It's launched on Steam earlier in the year, and we had like a really good player reaction to it. It's had like over 90% positive Steam reviews.
Oh wow!
So yeah, it's like people that play it are like really into it, and kind of it feels like it's a better fit for consoles. Like it's like I say, it's a little bit more that kind of sitting down and throwing your controller at the TV kind of gameplay sort of suits it a little bit better maybe than PC. So yeah, we're kind of hoping that it goes down well and people like really get into it.
Ooh, and it has a soundtrack edition on Steam. That's neat.
Yes. Oh, yeah. You can buy the soundtrack. I love the soundtrack. So it's basically, I did, like, most of the game is mine. So Ant Workshop, like, my company is essentially just me and, like, kind of contractors and people that I pull in to do other little bits and pieces.
So it's you and your slaves.
Well, yeah, kind of. I mean, I'm not sure that they'd necessarily think of themselves like that. But
don't worry, they're not listening.
Yeah, and that's why, like, so for example, it's been published, my friend did the, like, helped me with, like, the console porting stuff, so it's published by his company, Ground Shatter Limited. But yeah, so the majority of the game is my stuff, but then, this fantastic guy that I met while I used to work at Rockstar called, Will Morton, I sort of hooked up with him to do the audio stuff on it, and it's like, I'm just, being constantly blown away by what he's done there. And he had the idea basically of doing this kind of dynamic soundtrack. Cause we thought it's like, if the music's like kind of really chirpy and kind of really in your face and like overly excited all the time, that's going to get really, really irritating by the point where you die. Like you've died 100 times on this level and the music's still like da, 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 da. So it's like we wanted to do it so it's like the music, if you're taking a level slowly or if you're dying a lot and like kind of finding the level quite difficult, it's like the music slowly kind of drops layers out of the track, and like kind of really slowly sort of like pulls back to being like a much more ambient track, like to the point where like if you're doing really badly, it will just drop down to like this kind of ambient soundscape thing. But then if you're doing well, like if you're kind of reaching the end of the level and you're collecting things and like kind of really achieving stuff in the game, it's like the music like really pumps up and it like kind of layers all of like the layers of instruments back into it again, like really gets kind of excited about it. And yeah, so it's like I just absolutely love the soundtrack for it. And yeah. If you're on Steam, you can buy the soundtrack as DLC. I think also Will sells it on Bandcamp.
I will have to check that out for sure, because I really dig the music for the amount that I played with the audio. I'll be honest, a lot of it I played with the Olympics snapped on my Xbox, so I I didn't hear any of the music from the game, but it was a great background game to just be focused on that and like listening to kayaking or whatever the hell I was watching.
Binaries as an Olympic sport.
It should be. Jesus, this game is difficult. Like, I had a friend ask me what the game is like, and I said, have you seen those speedrun videos of, like, one guy playing Mega Man X and X2 on two different screens, but with one controller controlling both games? Imagine that, but the game hates you.
Yeah, I mean, you say the game hates you. So, like I said, it's, we kind of... We do, there's a bunch of stuff in there to kind of like try and away from like that kind of the core platforming stuff to like make the rest of it like a nice experience. So like I say, like having the dynamic music where it's like it kind of, if you're getting stuck on a level, it'll chill out a bit. So it's like, it's not in your face. And then there's the other kind of big thing that I'm really pleased with in the game is the sort of level progression and the map. So in like a lot of platform games, it's kind of like you get one level in front of you and then you finish that level and it gives you another one. And if you get stuck on a level, that's kind of it. Or sometimes games have like, I don't know, you can do, you're in like the current world of levels or whatever. And it's like, oh, you've got to collect 20 stars. And then once you've got 20 stars across these levels, then we'll unlock the next set. And it's really easy to just kind of like grind to a halt and get totally stuck. And I didn't want that. Like, I wanted people to kind of like have a lot of options for like, okay, if I'm stuck on this level, then I can go and try and find a different level. Cause what I always found, when I was testing it with people is like, there's a lot of different kind of challenges in the game. Like some levels are really reaction based, whereas some levels, like you've got to just take it really kind of slow and steady and it's methodical, and some it's almost more, puzzle solving and kind of working out like that that fast route, there isn't actually, like, some levels don't actually have any hazards in them that won't kill you. It's just about trying to figure out that, like, that fast route.
Yeah.
And different people find different challenges and different levels in it hard. And so, like, originally when I was first making the game, it did have, like, this linear progression. But I was finding, like, everyone was constantly complaining about, like, the kind of difficulty curve on it, because some people would find a level, like, I took it to shows and stuff, and it's like you'd have people getting totally stuck on the level and going, like, oh, the difficulty curve's on off. And I'm stood there thinking, like, man, there's, like, an 8-year-old kid here earlier that actually nailed that level but got stuck a couple of levels on.
So people just hit that brick wall and kind of, like, give up and move on?
Yeah, because, I mean, and that's totally understandable. It's like if there's a level that's kind of you're stuck on, and that is the only level that the game's giving you to play, it's like, well, what are you going to do? You're going to have a go on it for a while, but then eventually you're just going to be like, ah, screw this. I'm done with this.
Yeah.
So instead, we've got this map layout. It's almost like a kind of grid layout of all of the levels. And whenever you complete a level, it unlocks all of the levels around it. It's actually kind of like a hex grid. So if you finish a level, you'll maybe unlock like 2, 3, 4 other levels. And then that means it's like, okay, you've got like 4 levels to try there, and you've got to get stuck on all 4 of those levels before you stop making progress. And once you've been playing the game for like even a small time, like an hour or something, it's like you'll have so many other levels unlocked all around the place that it's like, if you get stuck on something, you can just go back to the map and you've got like a lot of other options for like, okay, I'm going to try and play these levels and kind of finish this set of levels over here instead, or kind of move down this way. Cause there's no kind of like, there's no end level to the game. And so this is another thing that people find quite confusing with it. Like, people will say to me, like, so what's the final level? What's the goal for it? And it's like, the goal of the game is to finish all of the levels and is to get the best rank that you can on all of the levels. There's no
boss mode or.
Yeah, and there's no like, there's no final level. There's no like, okay, once you finish this level, that's the game's finished. It's like, depending on how you choose, what order you choose to do the levels in, the last level that you do could be like a level that is technically, it's like sort of the 4th level in the game or something like that. Like, if you decided to bypass that and just go and do everything else,
yeah,
that could be what you have to come back for.
So after you beat everything, there's no, like, special final level that pops up or special text message that's like, wow, you should probably go outside.
No, so when you finish all of the levels, like, once you've completed every level, a little message comes up and says, right, now you need to basically see how fast you can do them. So like I said, the game, at the end of every level, it ranks your time, it's kind of like that. Japanese kind of ranking system of like B, A, and S rank. So like the S rank is the best rank that you can get. But all the S rank scores, you can beat them by, like, you can shave like whole seconds off the S rank scores. And I'm fairly sure that I don't even know kind of the best routes through those levels. There was one that I was playing the other day where I actually like shaved about 4 seconds off the S rank time of it.
Oh wow.
Yeah, so it's like if you keep playing it, you can keep doing that. And once you've completed all the levels, the game actually starts keeping track of like your total completion time. And what that is it adds up your completion time for every single level, and then that's it basically presents that to you as, okay, if you imagine that you played that sort of start to finish with all of those as being your kind of your best runs, this is how long it would have taken you. And then it's like it's kind of setting you this other goal of basically like chipping away at whatever levels that you can to kind of chip down this total completion time. And there's an achievement based around that as well.
Is it 38 minutes or something like that?
Oh, I can't remember off the top of my head. It's somewhere around those lines.
You
made
the game. You should know this.
Yeah, but, you know, it's one of those funny things with making games. It's like you make the game and then it's kind of finished and then you're doing other stuff. It's like, to me, this game's been finished for, it's been finished for over a month now. And it's like, we're in this kind of period of, okay, it's finished. It's been through submission. Now we're kind of chatting to people about it and kind of really trying to push it out there. But yeah, I can't remember.
It is 38 minutes. I just pulled up the achievements. So.
So yeah, I mean, so it gives you that as like a thing of like, okay, that's 101 levels that you have to kind of get your total completion time across the whole game down to under 38 minutes to get that achievement. So, I mean, it's not, I'll be fair with you, this is not one of those games where it's like, what was the kid's game was it one of the Airbender games or something like that where it's like had five
Avatar, yeah.
Yeah, like five achievements in it, and it's like you could unlock all of the achievements, like get 1,000 gamer score in like 5 seconds of playing it kind of thing.
Yeah, I think like under 5 minutes you could do it. All you had to do is button mash during the intro sequence and
yeah. I mean, so Binaries is not one of those games. This is not going to be on anyone's list of top games to download in order to kind of bump up your gamer score.
This will not be on True Achievements easy list for 2016.
This is going to be a thing of when you see people that have nailed this and got the full 1,000 game score off of this, that's people that you know of put some time and effort in.
Now, I do notice, achievement-wise, there is one that's worth 101 points.
Yeah,
are you worried that people are going to see that and be like, oh my god, I can never play this game because I need to keep my perfect achievement, like 0 and 5?
Yeah, it kind of, I know that there are some people that are a bit compulsive like that, but
bitchy?
Everything.
I like to call them bitchy.
Yeah. I mean, everything in the game is kind of, obviously it's called Binaries. We're very on brand with the whole, binary numbering kind of thing. So that's why there's 101 levels in the game, because it's this nice 101 is like this nice kind of binary number. If I ever make a sequel to it, it's going to be called Binaries 10.
I get that. I like that. That's good.
So yeah, it's everything's kind of on brand like that. So yeah, I mean, so the main problem with having an achievement that had like 101 gamer score is that then it's like you've got to kind of try and make the other ones line up as well. So it's a bit, that's a bit tougher. But
yeah, there's some tough stuff in this game. So just getting that 101 point achievement, I think that's going to be brutal for some people.
Yeah.
But it's a game that, like, if you complete this game, that's like a badge of honor.
I think so. I think there'll definitely be some people that'll kind of be sitting there and thinking, this will be on your list of achievements that kind of show that people have, like I said, that people have really put the time in and really mastered something.
Nice. I like it. Have you considered any kind of DLC for the game? It seems like the map layout of the game would be very easy to just integrate new levels onto it.
Yeah, I mean, I've got ideas for, obviously, like, as you're developing something, it's like there's extra bits and pieces that you kind of think of, and I have ideas for, like, extra levels and that kind of thing that I'd be interested in putting onto it. It's really something that comes down to kind of how well the game sort of does, how well people kind of react to it and that sort of thing. If it does well, I could certainly see putting extra little level packs onto it. Like I said, there's always kind of the idea of like, oh, maybe you could do like a kind of full sequel to it. I know one of the things that kind of people have often brought up as like a sort of wish list idea for the game is having some sort of level editor in it so that like players could make their own levels and then share them. It doesn't have anything like that at the moment, and that's something where it's like, okay, that's maybe something to keep back for the next one.
Yeah, that would be pretty neat to have a level editor. I could see people making some horribly evil levels in this game. I mean, look at Super Mario Maker and how insane some of the stages on there can be.
Oh, God, right, yeah. It's like, literally, so I've never played it, but the only videos that I ever see, like the only time that ever sort of bubbles up into my Twitter feed or whatever, it's like when people are sharing these videos of like absolutely horrific levels and then these people that are managing to finish them. I think they're probably a bit harder than binaries.
Yeah, like what the hell is wrong with these people?
it's certainly something that'd be interesting kind of doing. Again, it's one of these things of just like, okay, if people are into it, then maybe it's in a couple of years' time we kind of do a sequel based around with a little bit more based around that sort of thing.
That'd be pretty cool. I think this could take off. How well has it performed on Steam so far? You said it came out earlier in the year on Steam. I know you said reviews have been good. Have the sales been good on there?
It's not set the world on fire. Let's put it that way. It's done all right. I know, like, chatting to other developers, I know a lot of stuff that's done a lot worse. So it's held its own, but it's Steam. I mean, Steam's it's kind of a tough one for that sort of game, I think. I think a lot of the PC market are kind of into stuff that's got a little bit more depth to it. They're not necessarily wanting that kind of quick sort of shooty, quick kind of platforming game kind of thing. But yeah, it's done okay.
Plus, Steam is a fairly crowded market, so.
Yeah, I mean, I think last time I looked, there's something like about 400 games a month that come out on Steam, so it's definitely got its challenges.
That's pretty crazy.
and then you release something, and then people basically spend the whole time just saying to you, why isn't it on Linux as well? Why haven't you done the Linux version? Man.
Where's the Amiga version?
Oh, I'd love to do an Amiga version.
Where's my Virtual Boy?
I've got a friend that's doing an Amiga remake of Alien Isolation, I think.
Oh,
I think
wow.
He's still working on it. Yeah, he was working on it for a while anyway. The Amiga was essentially my first love in terms of computers and... Like it wasn't the first computer that I had, but that was the one that like really kind of sold it to me and was like, right, this is what I'm going for.
Nice. Whenever someone puts out a ColecoVision version of a game, that's when I'll be excited. that was my first system as a kid. My dad owned a ColecoVision, and I would play games with him all the time.
Nice. Yeah. So like I said, like the Amiga wasn't my first computer, but it was like, that was the one that was like really blew me away. It's like really got me into like, okay, this is kind of my hobby now. And this is what I want to do. And it's one of the brilliant things of working in the games industry. I've been quite lucky in that I've actually, I don't know if do you remember like Team 17 that, like they do the Worms games and, like they really, did like really made a huge mark on the Amiga with like Super Frog and Alien Breed and all of that kind of stuff. And I've been quite lucky to kind of like work with a whole bunch of those guys. And one time I had quite a fangirl moment, stood in a bar and Rico Holmes walked into the bar. And it's like, oh my God, it's Rico Holmes. I need to take a little selfie with me stood next to you.
Love the Team 17 guys on this show. We've covered a bunch of their games. We're excited because the new Worms game, technically when this episode comes out, the new Worms game just came out. So.
Yeah, it's a busy time for games, man. There's so much stuff coming out. I think there's about like 15 games come out the same week. Like 15 games come out on console, like Resident Evil remake and a whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah, it's getting crazy. It's the holiday season, so everything's going to start coming out now.
Yeah, it's really ramping up, eh?
So aside from Deus Ex, what are you looking forward to this holiday season, this fall?
I don't know. That is literally the only game that I've kind of had my sights on. I don't know. There's... trying to think. Dishonored. I mean, Dishonored 2 is bound to be. It was odd. Like, I came to the first Dishonored really late. Like, everyone else had really gotten into it and kind of chatted about it, but I only got into it, I think I bought the kind of high HD remake or whatever it was for, like, this generation and played through that a couple of months ago and really got into it. It feels like really kind of similar to that sort of Deus Ex kind of thing of like, okay, you can kind of just, you can either be a bit sneaky and whatnot, or it's like you can just charge through this and absolutely mash people to pieces. And I still, like, I'm one of those strange people that still plays a lot of The Division. Like, I'm like really into that still.
I kind of fell out of love with that game fairly quick. It just seemed like, I don't know, so many games seem to overpromise and underdeliver anymore. And it felt like that was one of them. I mean, I'm sure I could go back and have fun with it because it's a hell of a lot better than Destiny was.
Destiny, I'm not sure, like, I got turned off Destiny pretty quickly. But yeah, The Division, totally see all of its flaws, and it's like they keep trying to layer new kind of content systems onto it, and it's all just like extra kind of leveling up and these extra different types of currencies and all of that kind of stuff, and it's very kind of grind heavy. But I don't know, there's something about just like the core kind of gameplay of running about and shooting dudes in New York I
do want to go back and finish the campaign on that. I just wish I had a friend to like co-op it with.
Yeah, so I played through all of the story missions in co-op with a friend, and I think that definitely helps. I think like I played a bunch of levels like with kind of just match made with like randomers, and that's kind of good, but it's a lot better with a friend where you kind of like chatted and actually like figuring out how you're going to take people down and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I tried the Dark Zone once or twice and it's just not for me. I've never been a fan of PvP stuff in game. I'd rather co-op with friends and PvE through it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm exactly the same as that. So yeah, like again, like I did the Dark Zone a little bit, but I think even by the time that I got into that, there's gangs of players that have just got such high level equipment that it's like they will just roll over you, man. Like they don't even need to cheat, they're just so much higher level than you, and they're going around as like in a pack kind of thing. I'm the same, like competitive shooters, like I'm not really into that kind of thing. I don't really have the time these days to kind of really get immerse myself into a thing where it's like, I always find with like competitive shooters, it's like you really need to know map layouts and kind of which one's the best gun and all of that kind of stuff. And I just don't find myself with the time to kind of get that in depth into stuff these days.
Yeah, everyone's so excited for Gears of War to just start killing each other. And I'm just like, I want to find a co-op partner to do the campaign and maybe some horde mode. Like, in all the Gears of Wars, I rarely ever touch the actual, like, 4-on-4 PvP. I'd rather just play Horde mode with friends or do the campaign with a friend.
I played a little bit of Gears 3, but not that much. I think it was mainly 1 and 2 that I played through. I don't know. This new one looks, not convinced by the whole, next generation, get the kids involved situation. It seems a little bit strange, but I'm sure it'll be the same kind of super fun gears, cover shooting sort of stuff, chainsaws, hacking people to pieces.
Always fun.
To love. Yeah.
Have you considered adding chainsaws to binaries? I mean, you have spikes. You could always add a chainsaw.
Yeah, I mean, we've got spikes. We've got moving spikes. I'm sure I could knock something together to make it look a bit chainsaw-y.
For the DLC stages.
Yeah. Well, if anyone from Microsoft's listening and you want to pay me to do like some kind of Xbox, sort of special Xbox Gears of War branded version.
Oh my God, that would be incredible.
Some negotiations for that.
An M-rated puzzle game.
Yeah. Wow.
Every time you die, you just explode into gore.
Well, so that's the thing that always laugh with binaries. Binaries is E-rated. It's like there's no swearing in the game. It's kind of it's not even cartoon violence. It's like everything's subtracted away. It's like they're fine with it all. But it's like if there was like a little checkbox for like how much do people swear when they play your game, this would be one of the most adult rated games there is.
So I'm guessing you've showed the game off a bunch of trade shows and stuff like that. What are some of the most inventive and unique curses that you've heard about your game?
Oh man, So it's funny. So it shows like people kind of. I think people are quite kind of refined. I don't know. Again, maybe it's a British thing. Like people kind of don't really. Don't really shout and swear at me while I'm there so much. But we've had some fantastic, obviously, like with the Steam version being out, there's already like a whole bunch of Let's Play videos and kind of reviews and stuff on YouTube. And there's some fantastic stuff on there. There's one that's worth looking at called Worth a Buy. If you Google like worth a buy binaries, that guy swore a lot at the game, an awful lot. And I think there was like a couple of German ones where, so I don't speak German, but I'm pretty sure that I know a whole bunch of new German swear words, just based off of YouTubers playing this game. I mean, this sounded fairly swear wordy. It's always difficult to know, but
I just Google searched that worth a buy for binary, so I'm gonna have to check that out after the show.
Yeah, it's definitely a fun one. But yeah, I mean, and again, like we've had some fantastic. Every review that we get, I really enjoy kind of going through and like my favorite reviews are the ones where people are kind of. If it's just a plain like, okay, these are the features of the game, blah 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 blah. It's like, oh, that's nice that you've reviewed it, but come on, kind of get into the spirit of things a little bit. So it's like, yeah, like we've got a review, like one of the quotes that I really like is like this guy that's reviewed it and said like, I never wanted to kick a game developer in the shins as much as when I played Binary. So it's like, yes, that's more like it. That's what we want.
I love the fact that that's a press quote on your website.
Yeah, of course it is.
That is beautiful. Mike Bithell, infuriating, but in a good way.
So there's, Bithell is very kind of, he's had a special influence on the game. If you play the game enough, there's a little bit of Thomas in there.
I was going to say, very reminiscent of Thomas Was Alone.
Yeah, there's a lot of, sort of like a lot of the kind of jokes and a lot of the stages in the game. It's a little bit, kind of almost like my love letter to video games kind of thing. So there's a whole bunch of stages in there that get themed around specific other games and that kind of thing. And like a lot of jokes that are kind of riffing a little bit on kind of video game culture and that sort of thing. Like there's like a level where it's like, so it's like, is this game art? I don't know. And things like, I always really like, 'cause like a lot of indie games now, people like, it's really cool that like so many games are into the story of the games, but it's like you see some stuff where people are kind of like, oh yeah, this is my bullet hell shooter, and it's about a man's kind of descent into his own mind and his insanity and kind of coming to grips with who you are and what your family is and stuff like that. And you're like, is it really that about that though? So there's a little bit of kind of poking fun at that kind of approach to things. But yeah, and obviously there's stuff in there, like people, every time we show it to people, it's like they bring up like, oh my God, it's the Portal color scheme. And we've got teleporters in the game as well. So it's like, but very specifically, they are teleporters. They are not portals. And that is legally, I would just like to make it very clear that legally teleporters and portals are two very different things. So those Valve guys cannot come after me.
Exactly. It's okay. They're not going to listen to this show anyway.
Well, you never know. You can never say who's going to listen.
I do like the one screenshot on the website that says, the text in it says, this is an indie game. Where's the pixel art? which leads me to a question. The game features a handful of different visual filters, like you could change it to black and white or like chromatic stuff like that. There is a pixel style visual filter. Does the text change in that level if you play it with the pixel filter?
It doesn't, but it's probably unreadable at that point. Like, the pixel filter basically makes a lot of the text kind of unreadable. But, the visual stuff, that's kind of like another, like, sort of layer of joking onto it as well. Like, so if you play with, like, the sort of, grey version and stuff like that, it's like, actually, I'm not even sure what I mentioned before. So the whole thing is kind of themed around blue and orange. And you, like, once one of your characters is blue, one of your characters is orange, the orange one's immune to being hit by blue stuff. So it's like, if there's some blue spikes, the orange one can touch them and it's fine, and vice versa. But obviously when you're playing it in like the kind of grayed out version, it is impossible to tell the difference between the two colors. So it's kind of like, I always like look at it as like, if you manage to play the game with any of those kind of color filters on as well, it's like, that's the hard mode of the game. Like, that's,
you know, I mean, if the game is too easy for you.
Exactly that, yeah. So it's like, I didn't even put any achievements into that kind of thing, because I thought that, like, those would be achievements that people cannot get. Like, I could not be confident that people would be able to finish it with any of the visual modes on at all.
I think a fun hidden achievement would have been to have the stage that says, where's the pixel art, playing as the pixel filter. And the achievement name is just, oh, there it is.
You should have been a game designer.
No, I just have good ideas every now and then.
Well,
quote unquote, maybe. Good ideas.
that's all I can do. That's all I do, man. Just sit there, sit at a desk, think about some stuff, write some stuff.
This show's only purpose is to give decent ideas way after they were due.
Oh, never mind. If you've got any ideas for the next games, I'll be sure to incorporate them. The next game is 2-on-2 squid underwater squid basketball called Clam Dunk.
Oh my God! Are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh my God, that's incredible.
So it's kind of, the whole idea of it is that you control your squid using like the two analog sticks. So it's like you've got So squids have like a whole bunch of little tentacles and then two big tentacles. So it's like you're controlling both of your big tentacles, and then it kind of drags the rest of your squid body around after you. It's quite good fun. It's like the sort of four player competitive 2v2 basketball underwater.
What kind of release window is that looking at? Next year sometime? Later this year?
Yeah, that'll probably be next year. It's just something, it's just like a daft project that I've kind of been messing around with. Hopefully we'll get that onto consoles as well, but we'll just have to see.
Please let that one come to console.
Yeah, we'll have to see how it goes.
The title alone is worth buying.
I know, and it's not, I didn't even come up with that. That's the shocking thing.
Oh man, Clam Dunk.
Someone on Twitter came up with that for me, so.
Whoever that user was, they deserve like free copies of your games for life.
I'll have to go back through and hunt them down, track them down.
They get a special. They get like an executive producer credit in the game.
Yeah, that'll be it. So yeah, if you have any ideas for Clam Dunk, I'm just at the moment, just before we started speaking, I was putting in Pufferfish. So there's like a little puffer fish that goes around, and it's like if you hit the puffer fish, it pops and kind of becomes this big spiky sort of ball that's bouncing around the place that you've got to try and avoid.
Oh, man. You should team up for a crossover with Mike Micah and iDarb.
Oh, yeah. What's that?
The game iDarb.
iDarb. Don't think I know that. What you doing that one?
You should check that one out. That's like a 4-on-4, kind of like 2D soccer style game, platforming soccer-ish.
Okay.
That's just over the top crazy. It's on Xbox One, it's on Windows 10. Not sure if it's ever gonna show up on PlayStation or not. I know they've talked about it in the past. The game is just ridiculously over the top, and I think that'd be a cool crossover to merge game worlds. That's what I was reminded of when you first said squid basketball, underwater basketball.
Well, you know, everyone likes crazy. What will those crazy indies think of next?
I mean, come on, there's a game called Starwall, where you're a space narwhal trying to stab other narwhals in the heart.
Yeah, it's good for... Yeah, I've played that. That's good fun, man.
It's there's just so many insane games out there, so bring on Clam Dunk. I'm excited for that one.
Yeah, so that's the next thing, and then I'm also messing around with... I've got this kind of grand vision of that I want to make the best Ghostbusters game that there is. But...
Well, I'm sure you can't do any worse than the Ghostbusters game that just came out.
Well, right. It's like people keep making bad Ghostbusters games. Like, there was the Ghostbusters game that came out last generation. That was pretty good. But I want to do more.
Do you think you'd be able to secure the license for that? Or would you just do kind of like a non-Ghostbusters
just,
Ghostbusters?
Yeah, let's just call it like spook hitters or something. We'll think of a bit. Think of a better name later on, but, you know.
Boastgusters.
Yeah, definitely not Ghostbusters.
That would be fantastic.
But yeah, there's something about it that I like the idea of, that like the best Ghostbusters game that there would be, and it's not even an actual Ghostbusters game. I think people could get on board with that.
I think people just want another good Ghostbusters game, because everyone was so bummed with the one that just came out. They're like, we just want a good Ghostbusters game.
Someone's got to be making a Ghostbusters game for VR, right? It's like, that would be perfect.
That'd be cool. I hope someone is. Hopefully Activision's not, because they don't have a good track record so far.
Well, I think legally I'm probably not allowed to say anything about Activision, having worked for them, so...
Oh, yeah.
I'll step back from that one, but... Yeah, it's, yeah.
I'm allowed to say whatever I want, so...
Well, I'll type some stuff in Skype chat, and then you can say it as if it is your own opinions about...
A little birdie on the internet once told me that Activision can suck a bag of dicks.
That I did not type that, by the way. If any of Activision's lawyers are listening, that was not me that typed.
Again, no worries. Activision is not listening to this show.
Activision are always listening.
Hey, I'm happy with Activision. They've been nice enough to let us cover Deadpool in the past and the Marvel games. So as long as it's not Call of Duty related, I'm cool with Activision for the most part. They do a lot of infuriating stuff with the remasters they're putting out and the prices that they ask. But, you know, as long as games are good, I guess wait for a sale and play it. But
yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, I think that they have a really good handle on what the like Call of Duty audience wants, and it's one of those funny things of like the kind of verbal, like the sort of what you read people shouting about on the internet and what you read people getting mad about on the internet versus how people actually behave and kind of what people do actually buy and that sort of thing. It's like the Call of Duty guys have got, I mean, they know what their players want, and because they can actually see what their players are doing in the game a lot better than what you see from kind of just some people complaining about stuff. I mean, yeah. I always remember that. And I think it was Modern Warfare 2 where there was like some kind of people had set up like some kind of Steam group for like people
who boycott Modern Warfare. Modern
Warfare 2. And it's like, and there's this like quite famous screen grab of it's like they're all playing Modern Warfare 2.
90% of them are playing Modern Warfare 2. Yeah.
Like people on the internet get mad about all kinds of stuff, and then
they're really bad at boycotting.
Yeah, because why would you? It's a fun game, man.
I don't know, it's never been for me because so much of it comes down to PvP, and again, I don't care.
I'm mainly so Call of Duty again. It's definitely one of those ones where I feel like you've kind of got to be in it on kind of right at the ground floor on day one to stand a hope of like kind of learning the maps and kind of keeping up with the progression of stuff.
Yeah.
But
I picked up the campaign stuff. Advanced Warfare, that's the one I picked up because I thought the campaign looked really cool and I enjoyed what I played of it, and then I was like, you know what, let me try online just, you know, once or twice, give it a fair shot. I gave up after like two matches. I'm like, this, I can't do this. I was outclassed in every possible way. I couldn't do anything.
Yeah, it can be pretty brutal, that kind of respawn, get shot. Right, okay, respawn again, get shot again. I think the only online shooter that I've actually quite enjoyed recently has been, Star Wars, like Battlefront. And that's kind of, I don't know what it is about it, but it's like I find it really relaxing. So it's like in something like Call of Duty, it's like I find it really stressful and really tense, and it's like, I keep dying. Whereas like in like Star Wars, it's like, I think it's because there's so many people on each team. It's like everything keeps going. Even if you keep dying, it's like life in that game is kind of so ephemeral and doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
It's like, as long as you kind of manage to do like a little bit, it's like you can feel like you're kind of helping your team, and it's not like the old like Battlefield games where it's like your team has like a sort of pool of lives, and it's like if you keep dying, you're actually kind of wasting lives for your team sort of thing. It's like you can just keep respawning. Like a lot of the time, it'll let you respawn like literally where you died, pretty much like right next to one of your teammates. So.
That's something I enjoy about the Warzone mode in Halo 5. It's just like a massive battle, like 16-on-16 or something like that. It's been a while since I played, so I don't remember the exact numbers. But it's you, it's AI, you know, you're capturing bases and trying to get the other one. And if you, you know, you feel like you're contributing, even if you're just like taking out the AI Marines. Like you feel like you're still doing something.
That's it. I think that stuff's quite important. Whereas, like, in Call of Duty, because it's, like, it's you versus all these other guys, it's, like, if you spawn and then get shot straight away, it's, like, well, I've done nothing.
That's my day-to-day life. Every day I wake up and I go to bed and I say, I've done nothing.
Oh. You make a podcast, man.
Barely.
Sometimes I make a podcast.
I think it's an okay show.
Yeah, it's good.
It's guests like you that make my show better than it really is.
Well, that's very kind of you to say.
Like, go back and listen to some of our early episodes. Oh, they were terrible. Actually, don't go back and listen to our early episodes, because they are terrible.
I tried to... So for about a year, I did a podcast. Where, like, I was basically doing a podcast about the company and kind of learning... like a lot of like sort of learning how to set up a company and the sort of different weird different things that you need to think about. Cause it's like, this is making games. Like I said, it's like making games is something that I've done for a long time, but like the whole kind of like actually the business bit of making games is something that's still super new to me. And I still don't really understand it that well. I hire someone else to do all my PR and hook people up with the game and that sort of thing. And I just kind of hope that it sounds. But yeah, so I used to do a podcast for that. And,
The Bigger Than Hollywood?
That's right. Yeah. So it's like a half hour long episodes, and it used to take me like a morning. It's like by the time I'd like record, like sort of got the room set up and then recorded it and then kind of sat down and then listened to it through and edited it and kind of then got it all uploaded and stuff like that. It's like took 3 hours or something to output like this half an hour of podcast. It's like, you can really give me, a whole different perspective on, like, I know like a whole bunch of games developers, like really quite down on like YouTubers and that sort of thing. And like, oh, all they're doing is recording their game and then popping out there. It's like, there's a YouTuber that I know that puts out 8 videos a day. And it's like, that is a phenomenal amount of work.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I've got a lot of respect for people that kind of put out podcasts, put out videos, let's plays, all of this kind of stuff. It's time consuming. It's hard work, man.
Yeah. I like to joke around that, like, this is a shitty show and, you know, I don't do anything with it, but I've literally never worked harder than trying to keep this show running, especially now that we've gotten into, you know, developer interviews and game reviews. There's some weeks that we'll have a dozen games to talk about, and, you know, just having, you know, getting in touch with people to review them for us or doing it myself or whatever, you know, recording the shows, recording an interview separate from the show, editing everything together, making sure that all my programs are working and not fucking up on me, which I've been having issues with just audio problems or an echo in an episode, or, you know, my Skype recorder not working, so I have to use a backup recorder that's like dropping half my audio.
Mm.
Yeah, and just trying to get the episode out and sounding decent enough to listen to. And then, you know, I have to upload it to YouTube, get the write-up there. I have to upload it to our Tumblr, have the write-up there so that it goes on to iTunes and then on my personal site. And then I have to tweet out the link and include everybody who I talked about on that episode. And then I email everybody back to make sure that they know that I covered them on the episode. I do a shockingly amount of work for how little effort shows on this show.
But that's the thing. Yeah, it's like, with anything, it's like it's all that kind of the back end of stuff. It's like when you're making games, it's like the bit of making games that takes the time almost isn't the stuff that you see. It's like it's all of the other fiddly kind of back end stuff that is so uninteresting to talk about, but it's like is so vital to actually making a game work and kind of be nice to. Like, make it feel nice and kind of polished and that sort of stuff.
Yeah, and especially being a smaller show like me, like, I reached out to you to cover your game and invite you onto the show. I'm not big enough where people are emailing me. It's like, hey, would you like to check out our game? And would we be able to set up an interview with you? Like, I'm not important enough for that yet. Maybe one day.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, I'm happy that people like you take the chance on doing my dumb little show and talking with me and allowing me to cover your game. And it's fun to do. And I, as long as people like you are still joining my show, I'm going to keep doing this. And
good on you, man. I'll always like, I'll go and chat on like, podcasts and, all sorts of stuff like that. Like, I, and like, again, when like people if I see that someone's like on Twitch or something like streaming my game, it's like I'll try and hop on that stream and like kind of hand out like chat to the kind of viewers and like hand out a few keys and that sort of stuff, because it's like I'm on the other side of the fence to you guys, like as a games developer rather than like the kind of like press stuff. But it's like I'm one of the small guys. It's like, and I've got no kind of illusions of like, hey, I'm super freaking important and you guys are all just like, I'm not paying attention to you. It's like, we've got to have that kind of relationship where it's like the little guys all kind of stick together and all kind of like help each other out and
buy my video game, peasants.
Yeah, I mean, obviously that's what I'm thinking the whole time that I'm saying these nice things, but yeah, it's like everyone's got to kind of work together and be cool. And like I said, it's like I'm send out keys and stuff to like, you get all kinds of people getting in touch with you and sort of saying like, oh, I'm just starting out and I've only got like a few hundred followers or whatever on my Twitch thing. And it's like, yeah, well, okay, I'll send you a key, because who knows, man? It's small, but it's always nice to support people and it kind of helps them grow and it's nice.
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't have a huge audience, but I'm persistent, damn it. 3.5 years of doing this.
Well, that's, so. I mean, yeah, that's what you've got to do. It's that kind of, what's it like they say, like the overnight success never really happens overnight. It's like you don't know how long people kind of sit kind of banging away at something until it's like it takes off. And all it takes sometimes is like that one kind of little spark of like, you'll reach out to the right developer and like they'll chat and like, then maybe it's like, I don't know, something will get said and it'll all kind of blow up and
yeah,
that's when all your listeners will come in. I mean, obviously not this episode, because
I don't know, this could be the one.
I've not said anything. This could be the one. I've not said anything litigious about any of my previous employers.
Quick, curse someone out.
I'm not going to do that.
Fuck Activision. Fuck Rockstar.
They're lovely guys.
I love Rockstar. Maybe one day my show will be cool enough to get someone from Rockstar. Well, technically you are from Rockstar. So yeah, how's Rockstar?
It's good. They're working hard on something. So the thing is, I know enough people that still work there that I know what they're working on.
You know things that you're not supposed to know.
Yeah, well, yeah, because I mean the games industry is small, and people chat, and but like I say, I know, like from having worked there, it's like I know a couple of dozen people that still work there, so.
So when is the new Red Dead game coming out?
I don't know.
What about that Grand Theft Auto single-player DLC?
I mean, so I genuinely don't know about any Grand Theft Auto stuff. Like, I can't imagine that they'd ever do any.
Oh, but you know about the new Red Dead, don't you? Oh, you know.
I cannot confirm or deny what is being worked on.
I don't think anyone needs to confirm or deny. I think everybody knows it's happening. We just don't know when.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just want to see Bully 2.
Don't we all.
Or team up with Nintendo again and get us Uniracers 2 or Unirally 2 for the Europeans out there.
Yeah. I think they've kind of... I don't know. Well, I mean, they did the table tennis, so there's always... There's always the chance that they'll do something a bit crazy and out there that you're not expecting.
True. Never count out Rockstar.
Yeah.
You never know what the hell they're going to do.
They did table tennis because Sam's loves table tennis. So
that,
it's like...
That was such a weird game to come out, just out of nowhere. It's like, hey, Rockstar's putting out a table tennis? Like an E-rated table tennis game. Are you serious? And it was good.
Yeah, well, like I say, it's because the guys in New York are mad into table tennis. So it's like, yeah, okay, let's do that. So all you need to do is get them really into Unirally. Remind them how good Unirally is, and who knows?
Well, tell them to come on the show, and I will talk to them about Unirally HD.
I'll drop him an email. I'm not sure whether I've still got his email address. I'm not sure whether he would have read an email from me.
I did this really dumb podcast, and he talked about Unirally. Why don't you go say hi to him or something?
Yeah, I'm sure they'll do that.
That'll be the one to... That'll be the episode that we blow up when we get Rockstar on and confirm Unirally 2 for the NX.
That's it. That's what you need to aim for.
That's it. That's going to be it. That's how we break big. Well, I know we've been chatting for over an hour now, and we are getting very close to Deus Ex unlocking for you.
We are, yeah.
You know, because this isn't a week and a half ago.
Yeah. Get myself sorted, find a nice comfy seat, and then have a little bit of a play, and then go to sleep.
Indeed. So I want to thank you for coming on and talking to us. It has been a blast chatting with you. The game is fantastic, even though it has given me way more gray hairs than than I have gotten being married for 8 years.
Thanks, so. Man. It's been really good. Thank you very much for having me on. It's been really good chatting to you as well.
By all means, when you have more to talk about Clam Dunk, come talk to us. You are welcome back anytime.
Cool. Cheers, man.
And when Red Dead 2 gets announced, or Red Dead 3 technically gets announced, you're coming back on to confirm it. So, do you have any final words for our listeners?
Go and get Binaries. If it's out now, you can go and buy it. If not, go and pre-order it. It's a lot of fun. It's only $10. It's you will certainly get your money's worth out of it. 10 jokes. It's got up to 10 jokes. That's $1 a joke. It's good value, man.